Welcome to WST, your West Coast source for sports. I'm your host, Kyle, and today we have a very special guest, the Mariners beat writer for the Seattle Times, Ryan Divish. He joins the show to talk about Ichiro's farewell tour in Japan, the reigning AL Player of the Week, Mr. Tim Beckham at shortstop, the hot-hitting, slugging left fielder, Domingo Santana, and the key adjustments that King Felix has made this year. So tune in right now. I wanted to kick things off with Ichiro's last couple games. Can you describe how that was?
Yeah, for me, it was a trip of a lifetime. You get to cover Ichiro's final game in Tokyo, the whole pageantry of everything that went on for four days worth of games there, and all the things that go with that trip. It was truly something I'll never forget. I've never been able to do something like that. I'm really happy the Times, you know, obviously we should spend the money to go do that, but it was a lot of money to go there, and I'm really happy the Times allowed me that opportunity. Felt like, you know, tried to do good work to kind of fit it. But yeah, when you see kind of the reception that Ichiro got for the first few games there, the two exhibition games, and then the games with the A's, and then what it was like when he retired, it was something truly amazing, and probably one of the cooler things I've ever covered in my journalism career.
Exciting to see arguably, you know, one of the greatest hitters of all time, or definitely during our era, close out his career and do it in Japan. What was his final at bat like?
It was a little anticlimactic. I think that was the one where he almost beat out the infield single. He came up just short, and you kind of knew he wasn't going to get another one. And you're just kind of willing. You're in your mind, you know, you're not cheering for the team, but you're cheering for the story. Like, he gets a hit or something in his last at bat and is able to retire. I mean, that would have been cool, but they did it right. They worked it out with the PA announcer. So Ichiro ran out to a spot in right field, and then nobody else ran out on the field with him. He ran out there and he kind of looked around and he knew. And then the announcer goes, please thank Ichiro Suzuki for, you know, his career, and the whole place just erupted. I was pretty stunned, you know, and we knew kind of we found out the day before that this was going to happen. I mean, I think we always knew he was going to retire at some point in the next, you know, in those days, either during the trip or after the trip. We weren't certain if he would do it in Japan or in the U.S. And so I had pre-written a story that he was retiring, at least the background of it, probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 paragraphs of just, you know, background information about him, last season, all that stuff. And then we found out the day before that this was going to happen, so I wrote a little bit more. And I basically had to have I had a story ready the moment he was going to retire. And, you know, there was some news that broke out from while we were in Japan from some Japanese reporters. So we just kind of felt comfortable running with it. But yeah, I'd had a story written in advance for about a week. And then the real story, the initial first draft of the story that came out, I had it done before the day before the game. So we were ready to go when the news broke, and we could, you know, that's the way journalism is now. But it was pretty surreal. You know, this is a guy that I covered when he was at not really his complete apex, but I mean, I started covering the beat in 2006 or helping out on the beat. So I got to see him at when he was really good. And, you know, having watched him in college and all that other stuff, seeing him up close in person, you're even more impressed just with, you know, what he was able to do on a baseball field, because so many people felt like he would never be able to have success. And he proved so many people wrong in that regard.
Everyone kind of dismissed his stats and the things that he did in Japan. And then when he came over to the U.S., he just took the baseball world by storm, and the numbers that he put up. And, you know, you just expected him to get 200 hits every year. And he did that for a long time.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. What do you have? 10 gold glove, 10 all-star games, 11 straight seasons of 200 hits. You know, I just knew that he would get them. And he did it in such a variety of ways. You know, and then there's the defense as well. It was truly kind of a great opportunity to get to cover him. He was a different personality. You know, there were times where he was really difficult to deal with early on. You know, I didn't enjoy having to deal with him in the sense that, you know, going through his translator, and he could be tough in regards to certain questions. And, you know, I didn't always like how he treated the Japanese media, who followed, you know, talked to him every day. But I think as he got older, he got a little less private about his life, or about his baseball life anyways. And I think that, you know, he opened up a lot more, and that made it more enjoyable as well.
Mariners won 2 game against the A's while they were in Japan. And if you fast forward today, the M's are 6-1, and they lead Major League Baseball in virtually almost every offensive category. Their bats are on fire. Can you talk about some of the new faces of the Mariners this year?
Well, yeah, there's quite a few of them. On the opening day lineup this year, because Kyle Seager was hurt, D. Gordon started second base and not in center field, they had a new player at every position in their opening day lineup, because Felix Hernandez didn't start on opening day either. You know, Marco Gonzalez got his, compared to last year's opening day, everything was different. You know, this is part of the step back plan that Jerry DePoto wanted to go into in the offseason. It's a plan where the focus is on 2021, you know, a little bit at the end of 2020, but 2021, putting out a roster that's younger and more club controlled. And by doing so, they got rid of Robinson Cano and Segura, James Paxton, Mike Zunino, Edwin Diaz, huge contributors from last year's team. And so if you look at this year, they've got guys like Jay Bruce, Domingo Santana, Edwin Encarnacion, those guys, Omar Narvaez. They're all new guys that brought in as part of this plan to restructure. Obviously, Jay Bruce and Encarnacion aren't part of the rebuilding process. They were kind of throw-in deals from all these moves made in the offseason. And what they're trying to do now is hope those guys have a strong start the first half of the season and then move them.
Yeah, and you mentioned a name, Domingo Santana, left fielder. He's got 10 hits out of the gate. He's got 11 RBIs. And what a lot of people don't know, and I didn't know until this interview, is he was on the Brewers. He hit 30 home runs in 2017, and his impact wasn't that great last year because the Brewers picked up the MVP Christian Yelich and Lorenzo Cain. So he's kind of a name that people forgot about because of last year, but he's a great hitter and a great player for the Mariners to have in the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely prove it year in terms of, you know, last year. I mean, I'm sure it was fun to go to the postseason with the Brewers, but in one 24-hour period, the Brewers traded for Christian Yelich and agreed to terms with Lorenzo Cain. And I mean, that pretty much cemented Domingo Santana's role being different. You know, his playing time was reduced. You go out and get Kane, you get Yelich, and you already have Ryan Braun there, you're kind of stuck. And so he struggled with being a fourth outfielder and not really playing consistently, and he struggled at the plate, ended up having to go back to AAA to get consistent bats. But so the Mariners looked at that upside and the potential from 2017 and thought, you know, there's this big, strong guy with the ability to hit home runs. Let's go out and give him a chance to play every day. And, I mean, they gave up Ben Gamel, who was essentially a fourth outfielder, for an everyday outfielder. And it's worked out really well so far. I mean, Santana's been better than they expected early, putting together good at-bats. You know, we've certainly seen the power. And, you know, I think the Mariners believe they've gotten a steal if he can kind of continue on this track.
Yeah, you've got him, and then you've got the AL Player of the Week, Tim Beckham, at short, off to a hot start. You know, how can you describe his game for fans that maybe haven't seen him play this year yet?
Yeah, Tim Beckham's interesting. He was 1-1, as they call it, say, in baseball. He was the number one overall draft pick by the Tampa Bay Rays back in 2008. He came out of a high school in Georgia. I mean, he was just a physical freak, you know, shortstop, like 6'3", big, physical, had a big arm, hit with a ton of power. Like, he just had every tool projectable. And he was like he was kind of considered the consensus overall number one pick. But it just never really materialized with the Rays the way they thought. Inconsistency in the field, some inconsistency at the plate. There is power there that we've seen already. You know, he would have moments, but he could just never put a full season together. And the Rays eventually moved on, traded into the Orioles. And in 2017, like the end of 2017, Beckham played like 50 games for the Orioles. He hit like 10 home runs, had an 800 OPS. You know, he was a really strong player. And then last season, he got hurt. He didn't really have a role, and the Orioles were terrible. And he didn't play well at all. He hit 230 and only had a 600 OPS. The Orioles just DFA'd him. They're just like, we're going to move forward. We don't want to pay the money for this guy. So the Mariners picked him up on a one-year contract, mostly as a stopgap. part of this rebuilding, they went out and acquired J.P. Crawford, a prospect from Phillies to play shortstop, but they kind of knew that Crawford might not be ready. They wanted Crawford to do some swing changes and some defensive work at Tacoma, and I think also manipulate his service time a little bit. So they went out and got Tim Beckham, knowing that Beckham could start at shortstop in the interim and then move to being kind of more of a utility guy. I don't think that the Mariners expected Tim Beckham to have a 1,100 OPS and hit 500 out of the game. He's really just simplified his approach, you know, and I don't know if it'll stay, but the Mariners talked about, you know, they kind of introduced some data to him about what pitches he should be looking for, what pitches he should be hitting, and Beckham kind of embraced that and used it to his advantage. And so right now, you know, he's another guy that if he continues to play well early, the Mariners would probably move on. I mean, I guess you could maybe figure out a way to keep him going because he is arbitration eligible next year. But, I mean, I don't know that they really believe he's the shortstop of the future. He's still got some issues defensively that are pretty noticeable. But, yeah, he's been a big surprise for the Mariners. And, you know, anything you're getting out of him right now, they're more than happy to take.
They kind of plugged him in there, and he's raised the bar on what people think about him in the league, and he's performing at a high level. If we go to a fan favorite and a player that contributed a lot last year, Mitch Haniger, what do you expect out of Mitch this year?
Lots of hits and lots of RBIs and zero smiles. we always joke about how he's kind of a cyborg. He's so serious about everything he does, and he's just kind of a machine. You know, he doesn't like his process interrupted each day. He's a super nice guy. He is so focused on being good at baseball. He's almost like a robot. But, yeah, he's been great already. You know, I haven't seen maybe the power that we saw at the end of last year, but he puts together such a good at-bat. And I think part of the way he handles himself in the batter's box and the way he grinds out at-bat and the way he won't give in to pitchers, I mean, that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the team. He was an all-star last year, very deserving, and he was the Mariners' best player all of last season, and I think he's the guy, when you look at this kind of step back and rebuild, that's who they're trying to build around. Is they believe Mitch is going to be a guy that carries them going forward, the guy that they want to build around, not just from his production standpoint, but because of his ability at the plate and the way he handles himself, how serious he is about preparation, the way he carries himself off the field.
He's a consistent player. He's got his routine, and he's got good habits that hopefully will translate and spill over to these younger guys as the Mariners continue to win and build towards 2020. If we transition into the pitching staff, Marco Gonzalez was the number one, the opening day starter in Japan and the opening day starter in Seattle. How can you describe Marco to people who haven't seen much of him thus far?
Yeah, I mean, Marco isn't the most overpowering guy. I wouldn't say he's like a crafty lefty, but, you know, he doesn't throw. He maybe tops out at 91, 92 miles an hour with his fastball, but he's got a good curveball, a cutter, a really good changeup, and he's just highly competitive. He knows how to pitch. You know, I guess maybe you could do the Tom Glavine throwback days, although that's tough to be compared to a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's what he is. He's just really competitive. He throws a ton of strikes. You know, he isn't going to overpower anybody, but he figures out ways to get guys out. And because he can throw all four pitches and he's willing to throw them in any count, makes him difficult at times to prepare for because he will adjust in games. He's not locked into any one thing. You know, he obviously believes in scouting reports, but he'll adjust if he sees something, if hitters are doing something that he needs to adjust off. He has the ability to do that because he can throw so many pitches for strikes and has good command. And he's another guy, like, you know, if Mitch is on the foundation side for the position players, Marco is kind of the foundation guy for the pitchers. You know, they love his attitude, his work ethic, and the way he handles himself. He's a total pro. You know, I won't hold being a Gonzaga grad and a diehard Gonzaga fan against him, but, you know, he's a good dude.
Last night, King Felix pitched well. He got the win, and he looked like shook off some struggles from last year. What adjustments did you notice in his first start of the year?
He it was his first win too in like 10 starts, which is weird to think about. But yeah, I thought he threw his curveball more. I think the big thing is he just got ahead of hitters. You know, that's something that he's struggled with. He hasn't had good command. I know a lot of people want to talk about his fastball velocity being down to about 90, 91, but that's where it's kind of been for most of the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. He hasn't been a hard thrower for probably 8 or 9 years. But the problem has been is like his mechanics, which you would probably never teach a young kid, because they're so herky-jerky and they have all these, the big hip turn and all this stuff. As he got older, he struggled to be able to repeat them, and he wasn't very strong. You know, workout standpoint, he's not really committed on that level. So he had a hard time repeating his command or his mechanics, and by extension, his command of his pitches just went away. You know, he could throw strikes. He had control, but he couldn't throw the baseball where he wanted to. And hitters picked up on that, and they adjusted, and they really started to bang him around. And I don't know if his command is fixed. He simplified his mechanics a little bit this year, and he looked better in this game. Like, he didn't walk anybody, and he was ahead of most hitters. So, you know, that's – I mean, I think where he's at optimally, you know, he's not going to be the King Felix of old, the dominant guy. He's going to be more like, hey, you know, get 6 or 7 innings, give up a couple runs to keep your team in the game. And really, that's all the Mariners ask for him. They don't really want – you know, they don't expect it to be King Felix. I think after the last few years of his struggles and his injuries and everything else, they don't expect anything from him. They just are going to give him the ball and see what he does. I mean, I think everybody believes this would be his last year with the Mariners. His contract is up. You know, he doesn't really – I don't think he wants to stay here. You know, the new regime of Scott Service and Jerry DePoto, you know, he's not particularly close to. I don't think he has any great affection for them. And they really don't have any commitment to him. They've never seen him pitch at his top level before. So I think both sides will move on. So this will be his last season. It's curious to see whether he'll make it the entire season. If he's good, will they trade him? All these different things. But, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that he has some sort of bounce back here, because he was really bad last year. You know, I covered this guy when he was in his absolute best. And, it was must-see TV every time he pitched. You know, you never miss that start. He worked all the time. In fact, one of the few times I missed one of his starts is the start he threw the perfect game. So, I'm hoping for the best for him. I wouldn't say I'm optimistic, but, you know, perhaps he's learned and perhaps he can right the ship a little bit, because he wants to continue to pitch in the big leagues. And if he doesn't figure some stuff out and kind of get more starts like he did last night, that's not going to happen.
As pitchers get older and their velocity dips, you got to reinvent yourself or find new ways to win in the league.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so the Mariners acquired a right-handed pitcher from the Rangers, Connor Sadek. How do you see him fitting into the bullpen?
Yeah, I don't know, really. I mean, he hasn't been I don't think they're going to put him on the active roster till tomorrow, or I guess it would be Thursday, when they have an off day tomorrow, and then they play Thursday in Chicago. I assume that's when they'll put him on the roster. He's out of minor league options, so he has to go on the roster. You know, it's interesting. This guy throws 100 miles an hour. He don't really have much for other stuff, but he throws 100. And he doesn't seem to really know where it's going at times. I think he walked 11 batters in 9 innings in the big leagues. So that should be interesting. They just need bullpen help. Another guy named Gerson Bautista, who throws 100, that they got from the Mets. The Cano trade is also on the DL. So their bullpen's pretty bad, and it doesn't have a lot of depth. So I think Connor was available, and they decided to, you know, pick him up in a minor trade so they have some depth in the organization. I don't know how long he sticks with the big league team. My guess is they'll try and run him through waivers and see if, you know, they can outright him eventually if he doesn't, you know, fit.
Two questions, and we'll let you get out of here. The first is, what young player in spring training really impressed you that you think will come up and make an impact with the club this year?
The player that impressed me the most was Kyle Lewis, who was the Mariners' former first-round pick, and I think 3 years ago. And in his first pro season, he played about 20 games and then tore apart, you know, basically exploded his knee sliding into home and colliding with the catcher. And it's taken him 2 years to get back to being fully healthy, but he was outstanding this spring. You know, he's like a bigger, stronger Adam Jones is what he looks like. I mean, he mounts his swing. So he's a nice player. He's going to start at AA, and I don't know if we'll see him at this season, but I think he could be the opening day left fielder next season for the Mariners. But I do think that Justice Sheffield, the lefty. He's considered the Mariners' top prospect. They got him in the trade from the Yankees for James Paxton. And Sheffield was, you know, left-handed, throws 95, going to be a starter. He'll be in Tacoma. And if Felix Hernandez falters or if a starting pitcher gets injured in the rotation, Justus Sheffield will be the guy that they call up. You know, they want him to pitch some games in AAA to start the season, but I'm certain he'll be within the starting rotation by the end of this season. He's a big piece of their future, and they want to make sure they do it right. They're going to control his innings and everything, but, you know, he's a guy that could have some impact this year and certainly is penciled into the rotation next year.
Two exciting players we'll have to keep our eye on as the season progresses. So last question, and we can wrap up. I read online that you're a big college hoops fan. Is that correct?
I am. Yes.
All right. So going into this weekend, Final Four, who do you like to advance to the final game, and who do you like to win it all?
I love Michigan State. I love Tom Izzo and how he coaches. I like how they play. And I have a man crush on Cassius Winston, point guard for Michigan State.
Oh, he's good.
Great. I love everything how they play. And so that's who I've got. I haven't even looked at the other games. I have Michigan State winning it all in my bracket. And so that's my pick. But Virginia, when they get down 10, they get down, it's tough for them to come back. They're better
offensively. That's like going down 30 for Virginia.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Kyle Guy is a difference maker. Allowed him to shoot more and open up their offense a little bit more than they probably have in past years. But, you know, I just don't know. And I liked Auburn. I watched because, you know, living out here in Seattle, you watch a ton of Pac-12 games. And I watched Auburn just destroy Washington earlier in the year. And I thought, man, that's a really good team. And Bruce Pearl's a really good coach. And they're just super athletic. And they play so hard and they're so physical. And I was like, wow. I mean, I just want Michigan State. And if I win that, if they win it all, I could win some serious money.
I think you have a good shot. In my opinion, Michigan State's the best all-around team. They can play defense. They have different people who can score.
Oh, yeah.
And they have Cassius Winston who can carry them. And I wasn't surprised that they beat Duke. I mean, I was just watching that game. And you could just tell that the experience of Michigan State kind of took over in the right spots.
Yeah, Matt McQuaid is, you know, it's nice to have seniors, guys, you know, Goins, those guys are all seniors. And Duke, I mean, never really played exceedingly well in the tournament other than the first round game. I mean, they should have lost they should have lost both those other games, you know. UCF and Virginia Tech had layups. They missed layups to win the game. And so, yeah, I was happy. I mean, usually my philosophy going into any tournament is ABD, anyone but Duke. and that made me happy. I've liked Michigan State. You know, and it was funny. I watched Michigan State early in the season. I was like, man, these guys aren't very good. And then watch them a little bit more. And then that's kind of the, you know, when you have good coaching and you have good player leadership, you know, that they have ownership within the team, you're going to see that. And by the tournament time, I mean, Michigan State got hosed anyways. They should have been in a better bracket. Like, they should have been in Michigan's bracket.
Yeah, then,
They beat Michigan three times during the season, and they get a worse seat. But, you know, I'm happy they're there, and that's who I think is going to win.
Well, thank you for coming on and talking Mariners baseball and getting into the Final Four as well.
All right. Sounds good, man.